Hi, this is Rob Simone here on Resonance FM. You are invited to come along for the ride. The UK's only full-time alternative information program. Join us for this weekly journey of discovery here on Resonance FM 104.4.
As well as being one of the world's leading paranormal experts and ufologists, he's well known for commenting on world issues and politics. I'm intrigued. Rob Simone, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you very much. This is the Rob Simone Talk Show here on Resonance FM. And my name is Rob Simone. Welcome. Glad you could make it. We are, of course, worldwide on the internet at robsimone.com. And this is the UK's longest-running alternative information talk show. This is where I bring to you the most interesting people on the planet. And today, I think I've succeeded in that rather daunting task yet once again. Because I have someone extremely interesting. He is an attorney, practicing civil litigator, criminal defense attorney, and he's also a psychic. He comes from a long family of psychics. And at one point during this interview that you're going to hear, he even goes into my personal history. And he actually, surprisingly, comes up with some things that I know for a fact that he could possibly never know. So Mark Anthony's coming right up. We're going to talk about the interplay between his psychic abilities and his law practice. You should hear the story he tells about when he picks jurors. He goes through jury selection. Interesting stuff. Now, of course, as I mentioned, this is the Rob Simone Talk Show. I am passionate about bringing to you the kind of information you're not going to hear anywhere else. And it's really about the guests that have been on my show. And if you want to take a look, see who we've had on the past, go to our website, get our newsletter. It's all up there at robsimone.com. And not only have I been doing this show for 10 years, but I've started to guest host another show. It is a nationally syndicated show in the United States called Coast to Coast AM. I fill in for the incomparable George Norrie. And it's a very similar show in the sense that it talks about the same kind of things that I've been talking about for 10 years. So that's a big thrill because this kind of program, of course, reaches, I don't know, somewhere in upwards of 6 million people a night. It's on Sirius XM radio. It's simulcast on over 500 radio stations. And none of that, of course, would have happened if it wasn't for Resonance FM. Resonance FM has become, for me, an incredible launching pad, as for many other artists and program makers. So many thanks to all the people who listen and support Resonance FM. It is magic. They are a legendary group of people who are dedicated to what? Giving you stuff that you're not going to hear anywhere else. And they have provided a home for me, as I say, for more than 10 years. So that's going on. Get more information. If you want, contact me. If you've got someone you think might be good on this program, let me know. Always interested to hear your feedback. And I'll talk more about what's coming up, events, after the interview with Mark Anthony. We're going to talk about the phenomenon of communicating with people who have passed on and how he has done that and helped people and what that means for people who have gone through that experience. Now, he thinks this is something that is real. Many other people do as well. I know the jury is still out for most of us. But believe it or not, this kind of thing is actually used in law enforcement. Let's take a listen now to psychic lawyer Mark Anthony. Welcome back to the program here on Resonance FM and, of course, worldwide at robsimone.com. We're talking with psychic lawyer Mark Anthony, and we're going to discuss his new book and how he has come to combine two very intriguing professions. I think this might be a first. Mark Anthony, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rob. It's great to be here.
The psychic lawyer, I love it. Well, first, you were a psychic before you were a lawyer, safe to say, or did your abilities and awareness of your abilities come after you passed the bar?
I was born this way. Both sides of my family, my mother and my father's sides of the family, have psychics and mediums in it going back for generations. In fact, both of my parents were mediums.
Interesting.
So the chances of me getting that recessive genetic trait came from both sides. So the first time I recognized my ability was about age 4. But then I started, you know, it's always been there. And in the past several years as an adult, I really embraced it and started working with it and came out of the psychic closet, if you will.
Right. Well, what was your home life when you were a kid? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Florida, actually Melbourne, Florida, and I still live here and practice. I've been all over the world, but something always brings me back to this sleepy little town. My home life was great because my parents were very, very accepting of my ability. At 4 and 5 years old, I had all these invisible friends, but my parents could see them too. So I didn't have that traumatic childhood that a lot of mediums seem to have, where they think you're nutty and you're crazy and you're talking to people who aren't there, because both mom and dad could see the people I was talking to.
Wow. Well, what did your dad do?
My dad, he was one of the guys that figured out how to bring Apollo 13 back. He's a NASA engineer. Oh. He's retired now. A brilliant guy. He was a Navy SEAL, or they called him Frogman, back in World War II. So he comes from a real conservative, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant background. And in his family, his mother and his sister and his grandmother all had mediumistic and psychic abilities.
Hmm.
So, but they had to keep it kind of quiet. He tells this funny story how on Thursday afternoons, he goes, my mom and my sister had the ladies over for tea. Because, well, they weren't doing tea because they're conducting seances. And so they kept it very clandestine. And whereas on my mother, it was kind of cool.
And your mother, she was a housewife? Did she work? Did you have a lot of brothers and sisters?
I have an older brother and older sister. Both of them have ability. They're more psychic, which, in other words, they more foretell the future. They don't do it professionally. It's just something they have. Mom was an artist and a fashion designer, but once, you know, we came along, she liked to be a stay-at-home mom. But her abilities were amazing.
I mean,
she even impressed. Yeah. Well, she for her, seeing spirits was just as typical as seeing the neighbors. And she went to this seminar one time that Shirley MacLaine conducted. And on a break, all these people are flocking to my mother, and all of a sudden the crowd parts. And Shirley MacLaine walks up to her and says, "So I understand you're the one I need to see." And so Mom did this whole reading on her. And I remember asking, I said, "Mom, what did you tell Shirley MacLaine?" I thought, "Hey, this would be cool." And she said, "What I told Shirley is between Shirley and me, and it's none of your business." So I never found out.
Huh. Well, that's actually the right answer, really.
It is.
Yeah.
Because in law, as in mediumship or psychic ability, people come to me for counsel, for connecting to the other side. So as far as I'm concerned, ethics applies in both professions. You have
Absolutely.
To maintain the confidences of your client. You know, when people come to see me in the legal system, everybody understands that what you tell your lawyer is confidential. What they also need to understand is that when you come to a psychic medium, it is a confidential arena, if you will, and an area where trust has to be there.
Yes, but the veil of confidentiality can be pierced, to use legal terms, in the attorney client. If the client reveals to the attorney that they are going to commit a crime, or is it that have they commit a crime, the attorney is expected to reveal that to the authorities, right?
That is absolutely true. And I've had a couple clients that came to see me, and they said, "Look, I'm going to start buying Oxycontins, and I'm going to be selling them." I'm like, "Whoa."
Okay, so the question.
let's stop here.
So the question now becomes. If you had a psychic consultation with someone and you saw in their future that they were about to rob a bank, what would you do?
That's a great question. If I got that feeling, I would present it to them and I would say, you know, this is what I'm getting. I'm not saying that you're going to engage in this, but it is something that you really need to reconsider. Because if I call up the police and said, "Hey, look, I had a psychic flash that, you know, Joe Client is going to go knock off the ABC Bank,"
right.
So they're going to think I'm nuts. So it would be up to me to convey to the client what a bad idea something like that is.
It's funny. It's a double-edged sword because a lot of police, detectives, departments use psychics to solve mysteries that have gone on longer than they have the resources to investigate.
Absolutely. And psychic intuition and psychic impressions They are not admissible in court. Where they come into play is they're able to give the police leads, and through those leads, the police may be able to collect evidence, mm-hmm. and with that evidence, be able to develop probable cause in order to make an arrest.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Well, so going back to your childhood, you could see visions. Like, what? Tell us sort of the peak moments of your psychic abilities when you were growing up.
Well, when I was really young, around four, I had friends that would come and sit and talk with me, and I would talk to them and carry on these conversations. And my older sister, who was my babysitter, and I write about this in my book, Never Letting Go, she would wonder who I was talking to. And my parents would always say, leave him alone, okay? He's okay. But as I started getting older, I realized, and my dad had to talk to me, he goes, Mark, do not talk about this outside the house. They're going to think you're crazy. And what it was is his sister, who was a very gifted medium, had been committed to a mental institution in the early 1950s by her husband. He was very religious, and he thought that she was doing the work of the devil, and he had her committed to a mental institution and subject to electroshock therapy until she stopped, you know, engaging in her ability. It's a horrible travesty because the woman was amazingly, amazingly gifted. So he was obviously concerned when I started manifesting the family ability. But I remember when I was, I think I was 18 years old, and I was on a student trip to Germany, and some friends said, hey, let's go to Dachau concentration camp. You know, it was one of the extermination camps during the Nazi regime. And I've always been a history buff, and I thought, hey, this would be great. Long story short, we get there, and all of a sudden, I start shaking. And I start breaking out in a cold sweat, and I feel like I'm going to vomit, and I can see myself surrounded by hundreds, if not thousands, of these people in agony, shrieking and reaching out to me. And what it was is I was picking up on the residual energy and the spirits of people that I guess still linger there. And it was so incredibly overwhelming, and luckily a good friend of mine who was also going to college with me, he grabbed me and he goes, all right, bud, we're out of here. You know, he told me because he saw something was wrong. He goes, look, he goes, I know about you and your family. I'm not even going to ask. He goes, but obviously you were doing something. And everyone's like, what's wrong with Anthony? You know, is he nuts or something? And, you know, my friend Dave goes, no, I think he just had too many beers last night. So when things like that would happen, it was overwhelming. As I got older, I know a lot of mediums said, how you went to a concentration camp and you weren't prepared for it. It's like I was 18 years old. Okay, I had no idea that I would have such an intense experience. So what happens with a lot of young psychics, they have these incredible abilities, but they need to learn how to control them. And so that's why I decided to start studying in Great Britain with the British mediums, because they have a whole protocol. In fact, they're even regulated by law, and you probably know that having lived in London.
It's a little different over
there. Appealing.
Yeah, it's a little different over there. Well, you've had these extraordinary moments, of course, when you went to Dachau. Do these visions come into your consciousness at any given time? I mean, what happens when you're in a hospital visiting somebody? What happens when you're, you know, go by a cemetery or any place, for that matter, of any historical importance where people might have died under less than pleasant circumstances?
Oh, hospitals are always a challenge for me. Last time I was in a hospital, I was counseling a client in an accident case, and I realized there were three people who had recently passed standing in the doorway. And it was kind of like, you know, that scene in Ghost where I think Patrick Swayze is in, his spirit is in an emergency room. So it was something like that. Funerals are always very challenging, too, because the decedent, the person who died, always shows up at the funeral. And if you think about it, why wouldn't you? I mean, you know, you can feel all the energy, all this love, all the sorrow associated with you. So, of course, you're going to pop in. Plus, hey, I want to see who's there. And I was at a funeral recently of this firefighter, young guy, died under mysterious circumstances. And all of a sudden, I'm like, uh-oh, and I can feel him. And he comes right up to me, like slaps me on the back, goes, dude, you know, he's like 21, 22. And he realized I could see him, and then he went over to where his family was, and they were taking it very, very hard, and understandably so. So when those things happen, you know, I just have to be aware of it and be polite to the spirit, because they're not there to scare anybody or hurt anybody. To me, I think it's very fascinating. But I don't walk up to people in the grocery store and say, oh, by the way, your deceased husband would like you to know this. I think that that's inappropriate, and it's also the sign of an immature and inexperienced medium.
Well, when you're talking to someone, do you get those kind of flashes, those kind of that kind of information?
In many instances, I'm fortunate because I can turn it on and turn it off when I want to, and that's part of, you know, I'm very disciplined anyway. But also in my training, because, you know, Rob, do you leave the doors and windows of your house open 24/7?
That's a good metaphor. Yeah.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So why should you do that to yourself mentally and spiritually? It degrades the quality of the contact, because you always, as a medium, you have to be in control, and you have to let spiritual entities know, all right, I'm not doing this now. Leave me alone. I need to sleep. I need to work, whatever. And then you let them know, I am doing this now, and the quality of the contact is clearer, and it is much better.
Okay. Can you do it over the phone? Could you do it to me now if you got a message or something from a relative?
Yes, I could.
Okay.
Okay, hold on. You got a couple different people around you. Let's see who wants to come through first. All right, I'm getting... Wow, your family has a lot of competitive people in it, doesn't it? I'm being drawn towards your female/mother side of the family, and there's a woman coming through. She feels like she might be on what I call the grandmother level. So it could be a mother, could be a grandmother, because a lot of mothers are grandmothers, but I'm going to go with her. Bear with me.
Sure.
Okay. This woman, I feel that she was in probably her middle 70s, and I'm feeling this numbness in my left arm, and I'm feeling a tremendous amount of pressure in my chest now, and a lot of anxiety. So she either had like panic attacks or nervousness throughout her life, but her passing feels like it may have been heart attack related, and that's where I'm getting the numbness in my left arm, okay? And it feels like it wasn't an immediate collapse and death. It feels like the heart attack came on, and then there was a lot of labored breathing, and it took some time for her to pass. Does any of this make sense to you?
Well, you know, I don't know the conditions. On the mother's side, I never met the person of which you're speaking.
Okay, so you don't know about that. All right, yeah. So let me switch over to the father. Are you more familiar with your father's side of the family?
Both equally, yeah. Probably a bit more so, yeah.
Okay, on father's side of the family, there's a guy who's coming through, and he still had a full head of hair when he passed, and he's showing me his hair quite a bit, and it looks like he used to use that, like, it's either Alberto VO5 or that type of stuff, because he has his hair sort of slicked back, and this guy was a smoker. I mean, I can feel the smoke in my lungs. I can feel it all about me. And he feels like whatever it is that took him, it was what I call like a draining disease. And a draining disease is usually like a cancer, because I just feel him diminishing and his life force draining from him. Does this make sense to you?
Partially, half and half.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me work with him some more. He had an affinity towards horses, and I'm not sure if it was horses or horse racing. So he may have been a gambling man, because I keep seeing, like, first I'm seeing like what looks like a rocking horse, but then I'm seeing like a, you know, when you go to the horse track, and they give you kind of like a brochure, and you pick out, you know, who you want to bet on. So I'm seeing a lot of that.
That's a hit.
Yeah,
that's absolutely a hit. If we're talking about this specific person, the hair thing, he was an older gentleman, so he didn't really have a full head of hair.
Well, it could have been when he was younger.
Yeah.
And let me explain what I mean by that. This particular hairstyle and look would have emanated from, like, let's say, the early to mid-1950s.
Yeah, it could have been like a residual self-image.
Right. In other words, this was when he liked himself, or you know,
yeah,
all have like a favorite part of our
but
life.
It's funny, my grandfather, if this is what we're talking about, I actually remember him picking up used tickets at the racetrack and bringing them home and going through them because he thought there might be a winner in there.
Exactly. And did he die from cancer?
My grandmother died from lung cancer. She didn't smoke, but he was a smoker and a bit of a drinker, so I think it was probably just a collaborative, a symphony of things.
The smoke, and it wasn't just cigarettes. It could have been cigars, too.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting that aromatic, how some cigars have that real aromatic flavor. So he's coming through.
Although we weren't very close, but see, I would have thought other people who have died recently would have come through more, or other people that had a stronger connection to. But it's funny to think that he popped in like that. That's
well, what happens, Rob, is when I do a reading, if we had a one-on-one session for an hour, more than one person's going to come through. Normally, about half a dozen people.
Oh,
and they don't necessarily have a specific order. For some reason, your grandfather wants to come through. He's to call you something like, hey, kid, or kiddo, or kid, something like that. It wasn't like, oh, hey, Joey. He had kind of like this little nickname for you, and he really, really liked you. And you had this whole, and it seems like the contact that you had with him was fairly limited to when you were much younger, because that's the imagery that I'm getting.
Yeah.
And he got the biggest kick out of you.
Yeah, it makes you wonder who's out there. I mean, we're really never alone, are we?
No, we're not. And a lot of people get worried about that. And it's like, hey, don't worry about it. Went to give us a break, and they will respect our privacy. Because it's funny, when you start realizing that they're around you all the time, it's like, okay, so they can see me in the bathroom and in the boudoir. Ooh, can you give me a break? And they will. They respect your privacy. But yes, we are all energetically connected.
Huh.
If you think about it, humanity is like an enormous energetic web. And the fact that we have bodies and we're in the material world is just one facet of our existence. And when our body ceases to function, think of it as your body's like a car. When you're driving your car around, you're not the car. And if the car ceases to function, you get out of the car and you move on. And that's how it is when our body no longer functions. You take you with you. Your mind, your memories, your intellect, your likes and dislikes all continue on to the other side. So, and we're all connected to each other by love and by a sense of continuity, if you will.
Well, when did you first start to hang up a shingle or work with people directly? Is this something you sort of just kept as a hobby, or how did that work as you got older?
It got to the point where I was using it so much in my law practice. Like when I select juries, and in the first chapter of my book, Never Letting Go, I talk about during jury selection. This is a few years ago, actually more than a few years ago, probably almost close to 20 years ago. I was representing this guy who's in a barroom brawl. So basically it was like Redneck A got in a fight with Redneck B.
Okay.
And yeah, he wasn't like a creepy guy with a chainsaw going after daycare centers or anything like that. He was just, drunken guy. And the jury selection, we have to select, we meaning the attorneys, get to ask the prospective jurors questions to ensure that we have the most fair and impartial jury possible. And I kept zeroing in on this one lady, and I felt a female spirit associated with her. So I started feeling this tightening around my throat. So I knew, okay, the spirit died of some obstruction in her throat. So I said to her, to the juror, have you or has anyone in your family ever been the victim of a violent crime? Because I had to find out. Well, she begins to cry. And she says, about a year ago, my sister was in a foreign country when an escaped mental patient strangled her, dismembered her body, and threw her in the garbage. And I'm standing there going, oh, my God. And everyone's looking at me in the courtroom like, Mark, you've got to do something. And, I don't want to give away what happened, but it served two purposes, because what happened was I was able to deliver a message to her. I kind of had to slip it through the prosecutor constantly objecting and the judge, like, what are you doing, to give her an important message. And it exposed potential bias against the client sitting next to me, that there was no way this lady was going to be fair and impartial in a trial with a violent component to it. So to answer your question directly, these type of experiences started to intensify, and then it got to the point where I simply had to embrace my ability.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you get – is that really how this thing works, is when you connect with people on a psychic level, you – are open to the people around them who are deceased, or is there any other insights or clairvoyance that you're able to pick up?
Yes and yes. I'm primarily a medium, and let me explain very briefly the difference. If you want to know what's going on in your love life, career, and future, you want to talk to a psychic. If you want to communicate with dead people, you want to see a medium. But every medium has psychic ability, but not every psychic has mediumistic ability. So that's why you're like, you know, there's a psychic versus a psychic medium. So when I get around people, I do pick up information about them. It's very useful. I can always spot a sociopath. Sociopaths are really scary people, and they can be very charming and endearing, and they'll tell you whatever you want to hear, but I can always tell a sociopath because I can't really read them. It's like it bounces off. And I have a theory about that, which is psychiatrists say that sociopaths are incapable of the emotion of love. And what we do as psychics and mediums is a love-based function. So when you cannot penetrate that, that's when I know. And they can usually tell something about me, too. I've had a couple – I had one guy said, you turn off that beam you have going into me. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, you know what I mean. And I knew the guy was as evil. He was just an evil, you know, really, really a predatorial personality. But with not the extreme, you know, cases like that, people come to me, and I can usually tell when people are lying to me. I can tell if it isn't the whole story, and I will pick up things about them. So that's why, especially in jury selection, it is extremely useful to have this ability.
And you can do this remotely, too, when you see people on television or hear people's voices?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, I do the vast majority of the readings that I do are on the telephone. And I mean, in the last 2 weeks, I had somebody from Holland call me for a reading, somebody from Australia call me for a reading, and then of course all over.
So, when you see President Obama, what do you get from him?
You know, I get a lot of fear from him. Here's what I get: he is so far in over his head, and he's very good at projecting the calm, cool, "Hi, I'm Barack Obama. I'm totally cool." But this guy's terrified. He is so afraid he's making the wrong move all the time. And what I get from him is, if he had to do over, he would have given it another 10 years before he took a shot at the presidency.
Mm.
But what happened with him is his ego got in the way of his better judgment. And right now he inherited a presidency that couldn't really – it's probably the worst presidency to have inherited since, I'd say, the Cold War, definitely since World War II.
We got wars going on. We've got a global financial crisis. We've got new and bizarre terror threats. And to come at this just a junior senator, I mean, it's absurd.
It is. It would have been better if he would have done at least two terms, maybe three terms in Senate. Now, my prediction – is the next election, I have a pretty good feeling he's going to get reelected, but it's not going to be like the landslide he enjoyed last time. It's going to be just by the skin of his teeth. And I'm not big on predicting things because that's really not my forte.
Well, what about George Bush? What did you get from him and Dick Cheney? Did you get anything particularly interesting?
Cheney's very guarded and very shielded, but he's also very calculating and highly manipulative.
Well, that we knew.
So, yeah, that we knew. It doesn't take a psychic to do that. With George Bush, what I got was, you know, this guy had a good heart. He was very sincere in his beliefs, but he completely had lost control. And he was trying to always maintain the control. And what was happening is, behind the scenes, Cheney was doing what advisors to kings should never do. You should tell a king or a president what you ought to do, not what you can do. And that's why, you know, we've got things like the Patriot Act and the waterboarding and all these things, because within the span of just a few years, you know, we became the bad guys. And for the most part, the perception of the U.S. is always, you know, we're kind of the good guys. But now people look at us, they treat us with distrust, and countries like China are looked at more favorably in the third world and even in parts of Europe than the U.S. is. And so Bush, I think he just basically, he was so concerned with being the crusader that he didn't realize he was being manipulated by a very, very devious personality.
Interesting. Very interesting. I like the way you put that. Well, you probably spent a lot of time thinking about global politics, things like that. Do you feel as though, do you get a sense of these forces that are at work that manifest themselves as these cabals that would like to shred the Constitution or forming a global government? Do you ever get sort of currents of those types of things?
I do. I see the United States in a very dangerous position. I feel that we're sort of like Great Britain in 1920. We still have a global presence. We're still strong, but the cracks are in the plaster, and we're rapidly declining because other countries with bigger economies and more manpower or people power are emerging around us. And the problem is we're so caught up in this infighting within the country that we're not looking at what's going on around us. And I see, because I know a lot of people are talking about 2012 and everything's changing, and I don't necessarily buy into the doom and gloom of 2012. What I buy into is that the world is never stagnant, and it's constantly evolving. And, you know, World War II was the end of the old order. The European colonial powers faded into history, and they reemerged as part of a regional organization. And unfortunately, and I hate saying this because I love this country to no end, I see the current world order rapidly changing, and I see it being replaced. You know, when the British Empire went down, the U.S. replaced it. Well, that's not so bad. U.S. goes down, a military dictatorship like China replaces it. Not so good.
Well, I'm wondering if you were able to ask questions of people who are deceased. Can you pick and choose among the millions of deceased whom you want to get in contact with? Or do you have to have a physical link by the person who was related to them and standing in front of you?
I have to have a link. See, because in a reading, you're the one that brings the spirits with you. So I don't conjure or summon people, because people have called me up and, have you talked to Michael Jackson yet? It's like, well, unless LaToya, Randy, or Janet come to see me, no.
Right.
You know, and as interesting as that would be, but during a reading, sometimes I get a sense the spirits will open up for questions. Sometimes they don't want to answer questions. And why that is, I'm not really sure. I think what it comes down to is it's more about what they feel or know they need to communicate to us as opposed to what I think I need.
Interesting. Well, is this something that can be enhanced or developed? In other words, who says that there has to be these arbitrary laws? If you're able to talk with someone and bring in whoever's around them, maybe it would take a little bit more training on your part to go a little bit deeper, be able to navigate through the collective ranks of the deceased.
Well, there's people that believe they can do that, and perhaps they can, but what I do is when people come to me, basically I'm a radio, and I open up my frequency, and whatever spirit wants to adjust his or her frequency to a point where I can perceive them. Think of it this way. If you're looking at an FM radio, think of us on the frequency of 89.5, and spirits are on a much higher frequency of 107.9. The spirit has to bring his or her frequency down. I have to enhance my frequency so we match up somewhere around 102, 102.3. And it's a lot of energy on both ends. So there are people who focus on being able to, it's called transmediumship. In the U.S. we refer to it as channeling. And that's where you try to reach out into the spirit realm to summon a particular person. And you can get results to that. But in what I do, I find it's much more effective to have a reading with a person that has a direct connection to the spiritual entity.
Right. Well, the hard work is done already. Well, let me ask you about this. Do you believe that these EVPs that people are getting, these electric voice phenomenon, that are actually coming from people who have long since been departed?
I think so. I've been involved in a number of these investigations, and they kind of bring me along because I'm the extra equipment, and I'm fascinated by it. I mean, Thomas Edison, one of the last things he was working on in the early 1920s before he passed was a device sensitive enough to tune into the frequency of the other side. So if a genius on that level believes that it's all a matter of frequency, then I think we have to take that credibly. And EVP, you know, it's predicated on picking up spirit voices and things like that. But there's different theories on what a haunting or what ghost contact is. In a quote-unquote house that's haunted, a lot of times, is it an intelligent entity or is it an echo? In other words, matter retains memory, so a violent act or whatever occurred there, and it's like a you know, put a CD in a CD player that never stops playing. And so you get the feeling and the sensation that it's a spiritual entity, but it's really not.
So some of these hauntings can just be recordings going around, and it's not what you do. We're actually engaging in an entity that's coming through someone, and it, that's purposely having a dialogue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, some of these ghosts can be pretty mean, though. I mean, some of these ghosts can be pretty mean. These poltergeists can terrorize people. They can leave scars on people. Talk to us about the dark side of some of these deceased people.
You know, I hate to disappoint, and I've done thousands of readings, and I've even connected with the spirits of serial killers from victims' families that have come to see me. But as far as these so-called demonic entities, I haven't met a one, and it's, you know, and obviously I'm not asking them to come to me or anything like that, but I think a lot of times spirit contact is a misinterpretation of things. For example, you walk into a haunted house, and all of a sudden you start getting cold chills, and you get, you know, you see the shadows and all this. Well, spirit's an energy field. Spirit wants to communicate with us. So the energy field interfaces with ours. We get a tingling sensation that's cold chills. Therefore, we immediately assume that that's fear and therefore evil. And when I'm in those situations, people go, "Oh, it's so haunted." And I walk in and there's a spirit and I go, "Hi." And the spirit's like, "Hello." And it isn't all scary and spooky. And I myself have not seen somebody get attacked where there's scars and things like that. Now, is that possible? I think so. But in my experience, spirits are not here to harm us. They're here to communicate. And that there's a lot of people that buy into the primitive superstitions that foster the fear aspect of spirit contact.
Well, when you were in Dachau, these were tortured spirits that you were sensing, right?
They were, or they were residual energy signatures, like I was saying, like the CD that never stops playing. Mm. And because, you know, like I said, I was 18 at the time, and I went into this unprepared. So I may have been picking up on the energy, or it may have been spirits who are lingering there. There's three theories. One, that it's the residual energy signature. Two, it's a spirit that is, quote-unquote, trapped between this world and the other side. I don't think spirits get trapped. I think it's a conscious decision on the part of the spirit not to let go of this realm and to go into the light. And three, it is spirits who come back to visit for whatever reason.
Well, can there be malevolent people, just like as they were on Earth, as they are in the afterlife? Can there be malevolent people? People who are just as malicious and evil themselves, that can come back and cause harm to people? Or can, you know, a lot of times we say, oh, there's these people around you, like your grandmother, your grandfather. What if your grandfather was a terrible person and hated you? Could they have a negative impact over your life? Just as the ones that are guiding and loving?
I don't believe so. And the reason that I say that is I did a reading for a woman whose 11-year-old boy was abducted, raped, and murdered by a serial killer. And this guy was about as evil as you can get. never apologized, never felt remorse, and eventually got the death penalty. I was doing the reading for her. Her son came through, her mother came through, and I didn't know that the killer had been put to death.
Well, what was his name?
Vicky Rios Martinez was the client, and the little boy was Juni Rios Martinez. And it was probably the most famous child murder in Florida since Adam Walsh.
That wasn't the Zodiac killer, was it?
No. Okay. It wasn't the Zodiac killer. No, Mark Dean Schwab was the killer, and he had been let out. He raped another boy, was given 25 years, got out of prison after a year and a half. And the Juni Rios Martinez Act, which is a law that his parents got enacted, now makes these pedophiles stay in jail for their entire sentence, which they should.
Yeah.
So Mark Dean Schwab's spirit comes through, and this guy is about as evil as it can be. I mean, anyone that murders little kids is just, there are not words foul enough to describe this. But he was repentant, and he portrayed himself as like an empty garbage can, vacuous and without any joy or any hope. And what it is, when you die, the fear, the negativity, the anger, the hatred, those are all things generated by the mind, that dies. The spirit, which is a connection to the God force, the source, which is an immortal entity and essentially a love connection, is what goes on. However, he had to reflect upon what he had done. And so his frequency was at a lower band, if you will, than his victims, Junie's. And even Ginny said, over here, he's not evil, he's not bad, and we must forgive him. And it's in the chapter on forgiving those on the other side in Never Letting Go, my book, and it was one of the heaviest readings I've ever conducted.
Wow.
Because I get a lot of these type cases because of my background as a criminal defense lawyer.
Yeah.
And so here was someone who was, you know, would have been right at home in Dachau throwing children into gas chambers.
So you're saying they get stripped of their malevolent personality traits. Huh. So it leaves just the good, fluffy feelings behind?
I wouldn't say he was fluffy. He had now the ability to reflect upon what he'd done.
Hmm.
One of the interesting things in this reading is he said, I'm sorry, which he'd never said. And I remember Vicky saying she felt cheated at his execution because when she came in and the family came in, he was already sedated. He died by lethal injection.
Yeah, they didn't get any closure.
She goes, I wanted to see the look in his eyes before he died. And he came through and he said, I'm sorry for what I did to you and to all those people. And then I heard three other boys. And at the end of the reading, she said, that thing you said about three other boys. I go, yes. She said, this is not known outside of this is confidential stuff from the police. There are hair and tissue samples at the scene of my son's murder that didn't match my son or the murderer, and the police have long suspected he's been involved in the murder of other children.
Hmm.
And that came through in the reading. So apparently he was a serial killer who preyed upon little boys.
Well, what kind of insights to the afterlife have you gotten through these readings? I mean, is there heaven? Is there a hell? Is St. Peter at the gate? I mean, what goes on?
It appears the other side is a series of levels. Now, the Hindus and the Buddhists say there's 12 levels. Other people say there's 7. I don't think it's quite that easy. I think it's more of a spectrum. As far as a hell, and I was raised Catholic, so you know we're all about eternal damnation. Well, there's no eternal damnation. God is not unforgiving. But if you are a Mark Dean Schwab or an Adolf Hitler or Osama bin Laden, when you cross over, you don't go into the light. The light's the spiritual energy of God, and there's what I call the heaven dimension of the other side. And that's really, that's the beautiful, peaceful, blissful. But you can go into the dark levels. It's more like the Catholic concept of purgatory. You know, purgatory is like, you were bad, so, you know, for 400,000 years you go there. And, I mean, I don't know if it's exactly like that, but from what I got from Schwab and other killers that I've connected with, they can get out of those dark levels and basically are able to increase their frequency over time by acting as spirit guides, by reaching out, by working with other spirits.
Mm.
So basically, no one is beyond redemption. but it may take an extremely long time to do that. And I've seen so many incredibly beautiful glimpses from the other side. Just feelings of joy and happiness that are just indescribable. And then when I've connected with the evil people, they're in, let's say, like a cold and dark place, and they're striving and working and yearning to get out of it. And self-reflection, and basically they created their own hell, but not one that is eternal.
Well, what about reincarnation? If these spirits are in these levels, do they ever come back and get reborn?
Yes. And for those who go into the dark levels of the other side, reincarnation is an option. So let's say that Mark Dean Schwab reincarnates. Well, maybe next time he'll be the 11-year-old boy that gets raped and murdered, or maybe he'll be the parent of somebody that this happens to. I'm not saying that that's what happens, because I'm not God and I don't determine these things.
Well, is there any information about other intelligences, guiding intelligences, that are there with these souls on these different levels?
Yes. The angelic realm, we think of angels as these, people with wings and all this. And I can understand why people think angels have wings, because people will never become angels. Angels were never people. And when I've seen and connected with angels, their aura, like the energy field that emanates from them, is so incredibly bright. Like there's these light projections that come out of, they have a human appearance. The light projections that come out of their shoulder area appear to be like wings. So I can see how over the centuries people have figured that angels have wings. Angels are very intense, very good, very powerful, and they get along with human spirits in a very harmonious fashion on the other side. And they work with each other and they help each other. The more I've done, I see that there are a wide spectrum of intelligent entities on the other side. Now, I want to get back to a previous point that you brought up about negative spirits. Some of these quote-unquote negative spirits may not necessarily be human spirits. They might be, people call them pixies and fairies and leprechauns and all that sort of thing. And those are fanciful names for non-human intelligent species and non-angelic species. And I'm not saying that these things are negative. I'm not saying that they're positive, but they are there. And it would be egotistical of us to think that human beings are the only intelligent species in the universe. I mean, we know, and I'll wrap this up, we know that the universe is far more than what our five physical senses can perceive. And according to space scientists, and I know a lot of them because I also live near NASA, and my dad was one of them, 90% of the universe is invisible to the human eye.
That's right.
So,
well, no, it's not only invisible to human eye, it's invisible to our most elaborate and precise detection equipment.
Exactly.
It's dark energy and dark matter. We don't have things that can pick it up. We it's off our radar entirely. Well, tell me about the anecdote about the star people.
I did a reading for this gentleman one time. I was on a radio show, and he called in, and he said he wanted to connect with his grandmother, and his grandmother came through, and he said, have her tell me about the night the star people came. And I'm like, oh, great, I got some kook on the line. Well, all of a sudden, Grandma started transmitting to me this amazing information, and I suddenly connected with energies that didn't feel like anything I'd ever connected with before. And they weren't bad. And I don't like using the word bad or good. They weren't negative. It was just a completely different frequency. And they didn't feel like angels. And I start saying, well, the night that they came, the sky was this very unusual color. And he goes, absolutely, I remember that. And I said, and it feels as if time itself stopped, albeit just momentarily. He goes, yes. And we went through this whole thing. And now what I found out afterwards, because I talked to him after the reading, he claims to be an alien abductee. And I'm open-minded towards that. I'm not going to say I don't believe it or I do believe it. I'm open-minded. But I will say one thing. Whatever or whoever these energies were that connected with him, I have never before or since connected with anything like that. They were intelligent. They had a very dense vibration. And they were incredibly intelligent, yet not malevolent.
Hmm. So, in your logical mind, what do you come away with? Do you come away with the impression that you're contacted with some sort of off-world alien, perhaps an extraterrestrial intelligence?
You know, as far-fetched as that sounds, and as a lawyer, I'm also a skeptic. You know, I'm probably the worst skeptic. I have to overcome this. I don't know what other conclusion there could be. Now, I know that people that don't necessarily believe these things, and there's some people you'll never be able to persuade that God exists or that, you know, there's an afterlife, and that's their choice. It's America. We have First Amendment freedom of, you know, religion and belief.
Yeah.
But I don't know what these beings were, but they were fascinating. And it felt like it was a privilege to be able to connect to them.
Wow.
But I didn't feel like they were here to do an Independence Day thing and take over the world and all that.
Right.
They had some type of energetic connection to this guy, and this guy did not necessarily fear them. And it seemed like it brought him a lot of relief to have it validated for him that these energies had been able to establish contact with him.
Interesting.
So, yeah, and, yeah. You know, I mean, I know you've done a lot of work with UFOs and abductees, right?
Sure.
And if you don't mind me asking you, people talk about the star people.
Mm-hmm.
What has been the descriptions of the star people for you?
That's such a catch-all saying, star people. I mean, when there are people who are talking about the grays that are so well depicted in many anecdotes and affidavits about people experiencing them, that's one thing. Star people seem to have just a little bit more benevolence associated with them.
That's a good term, because that's what it felt like. It felt like this intelligent benevolence that I remember seeing something on the Discovery Channel about some scientists, and they shot a polar bear with a tranquilizer dart.
Yeah.
And the polar bear collapses, and they go up and they start taking samples and probing it here and there and taking blood and all this. And I'm looking at this going, huh. Okay. Because when I was talking to this gentleman who claimed to be an abductee, that's essentially what he said
they
did to him.
It's a very direct parallel to what we do and what many people say are being done to us. Well, let me ask you, too, because this is interesting. Casey Anthony, big trial, polarized a nation, most hated woman in the country. What is your intersection of this? Did you look into this to see what happened to this young, to her her baby, her daughter?
I did. I was working with a forensics group. We had one trance medium and four psychic mediums similar to myself, and And the trance medium was focusing on the spirit of Kaylee Anthony, and we were putting together what we got. And what I got was I saw like a mesh or grating over my face. I felt the body was in like a marshy water, but not underwater. And I kept seeing what looked like a park nearby. Now that we know where she was found, the mesh on my face, that's a duct tape, because the duct tape kind of has like this mesh-type substance in it. And in Florida, you know, with hurricanes and all, I've used duct tape a lot. And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's it. Her body was dumped in an area that is wetlands. So she was in the water but not underwater. And there was a school nearby, which is what the playground looked like, a park.
Huh.
So we were getting that imagery. And we knew that she was in the Orlando area, because it didn't feel like it was in the remote sections of the center of the state of Florida, but it was in the Orlando area. But we couldn't quite pinpoint the exact location.
Mm.
And I've been consulted on like the Long Island serial killer case and another missing persons case here in town, where this female firefighter just vanished. And I start talking about a watch. I go, she dropped a watch, and I drew a picture of it. And the police officer said, well, that is the watch that she was last known to be wearing. And her body will be found, in my opinion, somewhere near this watch, and that she's dumped somewhere in the interior of the state. Because I don't know how familiar you are with Florida, but it's real populated along the coast. Once you get in the interior part, yeah, you got Orlando and a couple cities like that, but we have miles and miles of swampland and along the St. John's River, which a lot of bodies get dumped in by killers.
Good heavens. Still a lovely state to visit. Mark Anthony, your book is called Never Letting Go. Where can people go to find more information about you and your book?
To my website, neverlettinggo.com, and you can look at the video about my book. It's just a few minutes. It explains about that. And on neverlettinggo.com, there's a logo for both Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Llewellyn, which is the publisher, Llewellyn Worldwide. And if you click on those logos, it'll take you right to the page where you can order it. Never Letting Go will help you in many ways. It's for anyone who's lost a loved one. It'll guide you on your journey through grief. It's inspirational because it produces evidence for an afterlife. It will teach you how to recognize when your loved ones in spirit are around you, and it's very healing because of the messages of love and hope that have been transmitted to me from the other side.
Yeah, well, I've certainly enjoyed talking about it, and I like your practical approach, and hopefully we can talk some more in the future. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. It's an honor to be on your show.
Hello and welcome to Star Talk FM with me, your host, Rob Simone, where I bring to you the most interesting people on the planet. Science, consciousness, personalities, you never know what you're going to hear next. Tune in and find out what all the buzz is about. Listen live on 104.4 FM or worldwide online at robsimone.com.
Yes, this is the Rob Simone Talk Show. Well, the tail end of it, anyway. There's never enough time, it seems, to do the things that you want to do once you find them. Actually, that's a line from a Jim Croce song, Time in the Bottle. But it still remains true today. So if you are interested in getting in touch with me, it's very simple. I like your suggestions, your feedback, and all of this can be found, contact information, how to sign up for a free newsletter, at my website, robsimone.com. And check out our informational website, the news website, if you will, startalkfm.com. That is where all the articles of all the topics, really, that comes up during the show gets filed, archived. It's really a pretty interesting information source. A lot of great videos up there. I was just watching one about how the British Army have come up with technology that can camouflage a tank and make it look like a sedan. I'm not kidding. There's a video out there. You have to see it. You won't believe it. Now, I know a lot of you have seen some of the stuff from 5 or 10 years ago, but the things they have evolved into now are absolutely stunning. There's a lot of other information up there about current events, and you would probably do well to take a quick peek at that all up there, startalkfm.com. Join us next week. We're on every week, Mondays at midnight. And, of course, there are archives. You can listen for free. Podcast at startalkfm.com. So really, whatever you need, whatever you want is up there. I'll come back next week with more of the most interesting people on the planet that I can find, grab a hold of, and sit down for an hour. So as to say, if you have someone, if you are interested to suggest a topic or a guest, please let me know. Because I always find some of the most informed people are the people who listen to this program. And it's all in a day's work for most of you. So my many thanks to Mark Anthony and all of you who have listened, not only to this show, but to my program for the past 10 years. I'll see you next time here or hosting Coast to Coast AM. Until next time, cheers.